Graham Goodwin, not only is it time for the week in sports cars, while I'm in my familiar base here in Northern California, you are, I think, still on Earth. I'm not sure. We're going to find out your geolocation in a moment. Somewhat normal routine, though. You are in the midst of a race weekend. We're doing our best. I think you're using your mobile phone, Wi-Fi, for us to record right now. Somewhat typical on my end, too. We've got a bevy of appointments coming up here in the Pruitt household. Got 45-ish minutes. I don't know why my voice broke between 40 and 5, but hey, got about 45 minutes. You pick the categories that we work from, all brought to us by Cooper Tires, the Justice Brothers, and TorontoMotorsports.com. Why don't we just skip the pleasantries? Let's go aggro, hyper, question-answering, monkiness. Where are we starting?
We're going to start in IMSA. I better tell people where I am, actually, and apologies for the sound quality. It's but we have no Wi-Fi in my Airbnb, which is located, I have to tell you, at the end of the runway at Salzburg Airfield, the site of the first Austrian Grand Prix. And across the road from Salzburg, obviously, is a Red Bull ring where we are for the European Le Mans Series this week. So that's where we are. We're going to start this week, and good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are in the world, everybody, with IMSA, to break a bit of a habit we've had over the last few weeks. And you've got an IMSA race weekend this weekend.
What? MP.
And yeah, I know, that's a shocker. So we're going to start with Steve Grinstead, who says, any predictions from Mid-Ohio IMSA? Saw a reference, he says, to free practice. Was there ever a paid practice? If so, how much? Seriously, why is it called free practice?
Well, it's a very, very simple answer, Steve. They did indeed once charge people to watch practice. Quite often these days, not as much, not as often. It's often free to come in, kidding aside. It's unstructured. That's why it's called free. Compared to, say, qualifying, many series have a very heavily articulated schedule for that. The plan is free. Make it up as you go. Do as you please. Try to stay on the tarmac as much as you can. Don't run into each other so much. Maybe it's not entirely free, Steve, but for the most part, it's free practice. Do your thing. Not a lot of infrastructure overlaid by the series or racing series in general. So there you go. Predictions for Mid-Ohio. It's been a good race for our friends at Acura. Mazdas tend to do okay there. Cadillacs tend to do okay in DPI. They're the only three brands playing. I wish I could tell you, oh boy, one's going to stand out more than the rest. It's a race that, again, I know it's favorite Acura of late, but I'm not sure I have a really strong feel for how this one's going to play out in the top category, Steve. Weird, somewhat weird weekend, Graham. I actually had a friend of mine say, hey, got tickets to the Acura sports car jamboree at Mid-Ohio. Going to head out that way. By the way, I printed out the spotter's guide, and did I miss GT Le Mans? Did I miss etc., etc.? And I said, no, it's one of those. And we have a question about that here, I believe.
One of those
weird weekends. I don't know if weird's the right way to put it, but it feels weird, where IMSA says, okay, if we were to run every class at every WeatherTech Championship event, we would be spending way too much of your money. So we're going to cap some of the classes at a limited number of rounds each year. Therefore, not every class will go to every event. This is one of them. So now, WeatherTech Championship at 5 classes, Graham. They are cleaving LMP2 and GTLM from Mid-Ohio. So we have DPI, the three brands that I just mentioned. We have LMP3, and we have the most populous class in GT Daytona. So, yeah, just a case of some classes don't get to play everywhere. This is one of those weekends, and my friend who bought tickets, printed out the spotter's guide, spotted the absence of some cars he wanted to see to spot, and then sent back a note saying, yeah, the heck with it. I just bought tickets for the Indy Grand Prix, so I'm going to go watch open wheel cars instead. So I hope the rest of the event is good, obviously at Mid-Ohio. Would say if there's one little wrinkle that's of interest, this happens to kick off the oddly titled Sprint Cup portion of the season in GTD. And for those who are NASCAR fans or just have awareness of NASCAR, it was called the NASCAR Sprint Cup for a long time. So the sports car series owned by NASCAR has a Sprint Cup within its Pro-Am GT3 category. Again, not a new thing, but it does kick off this weekend since it is a non-endurance round, the first non-endurance round, couple of either new teams and or new models for some teams debuting. Our friends at Compass Racing parking their McLaren and using an Acura also have the Carbon with Peregrine Racing Team debuting a Audi, stepping up from Michelin Pilot Challenge. And yeah, there's not a ton of Sprint Cup entries this weekend, Graham and Steve, but again, little new wrinkle to follow, launching here at the good old Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course.
Well, that also answers, you're quite right, MP, the question from at Let's Go Kings 15.
Oh, you didn't want to read his screen name?
No, we're not going to do that because it's a family show. But as to why no GTLM at Mid-Ohio, we've got from Tim Blatt. There's a bit of talk, he says, Tim, about shaking up the IMSA schedule. Other than the pandemic, there's only been one change since 2014, swapping COTA for Mid-Ohio. And on the same issue, Brian at AG Bullet 25 says, from your conversations with people in the paddocks and beyond, what would it take to see a return of IMSA to the circuit of the Americas?
I almost regret having to trot out this overly worn expression, that being date equity. I almost need to add an echo effect to that, don't I? Date equity is the main answer here, Tim. Yeah, I get it. I think there's value to that approach of, hi, we have a number of tracks that we go to each year. We're quite fond of them, and we want to build on them or continue longstanding traditions of going to those events. So we're going to keep holding them in or around the same-ish time every year so that the, quote, date equity continues to build. You know that late June, you're going to have the Salem 6 Hours at the Glen. You know January's Daytona. Middle of March is Sebring. Just run down the list of the things that you kind of sort of know what is going to be on the schedule each year. To the point to where, Graham, if you and I just wrote down the tracks and the months right now, not knowing the exact date on some, we could probably give you the 2022 IMSA calendar right now, as could any of you who are, you know, regular consumers of IMSA's product. So to Tim's greater point, not a lot of shaking up, brother. The opposite of shaking up, a lot of stability. What does it mean? Well, for those who love the tracks on IMSA's calendar, boy, you get to love them a lot every year after year. For those who are wishing for a little bit of variety, or they might come to your local track that they aren't visiting, date equity. So that's the answer. As for COTA, Brian, I would say that they are spending money to have NASCAR come there, which is great. Questions as for the not long-term, short-term continuation and viability of Formula One competing there. Does that free up budget to possibly invite an IMSA, an IndyCar, name some other North American series to come and headline in the absence of F1? Potentially. Did it produce fans when you and I were there, Graham, for WEX / IMSA / ALMS? Wasn't there even a Grand Am race there? I don't know. But anyways, yeah. Yeah. So I would spend time looking up sports car races at COTA on the YouTubes or similar, Brian, and just possibly be satisfied that that might be the extent of what you get to enjoy there with sporty cars at COTA. And I'd say F1 would really be the driver for whether that could change.
Okay. Well, oddly enough, we've got two more questions, both about circuits. First of them comes from Matt McDonald. Matt says, one way or another, I will be going, he says, to the 6 hours of Glen this year. I miss being able to see IndyCar there. So every year, I'm terrified that the Glen will become another thing of the past for IMSA too. Am I unnecessarily worried about the fate of my favorite road course?
Yes. Nothing to fear there. Big, big friendship, big long-standing relationship between NASCAR, IMSA, and Watkins Glen. So, yeah, I can't think of any reason for that relationship to change. This, Matt, very quickly, is all about NASCAR. And if by chance NASCAR would stop going there, that would mean bigger problems exist between both organizations. I can't imagine a day where NASCAR is not showing up at Watkins Glen, and therefore that door should always be open for IMSA to continue going. So I would say whatever fears you have, just let them be free. Satan, we rebuke you. Relieve our brother Matt from any concerns about IMSA no longer attending Watkins Glen. Amen. So there we go. We've just performed our first sports car exorcism on our show, Graham. So where are we going next? And by the way, it's only 11:56 a.m. and I'm not drunk. I'm just, you know, this is the bizarre headspace I'm in. So yes.
Chris Mark is the final question, IMSA, about a circuit at least, where it says, hi MP, it's still a long way till this year's IMSA Laguna Seca round. What's your take at the moment on the likelihood of spectator attendance? Hashtag me personally. Chris would love to get to attend in person, but then it's just an hour's drive down there. Can't wait to watch races on site again.
Well, Chris, because I'm a mischievous person, I saw your submission, forwarded it to my friends at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, and now the security guards are on the lookout for you. So don't even try to show up, buddy. Oh, man, you're going to be in. They got handcuffs aplenty waiting for you. As my wife informed me last night, maybe the night before, our governor, Gavin Newsom, who I believe is going to be undergoing a recall, and who knows, might not be our governor in a little bit, he intends to, air quote, reopen the state in early June. And so knowing that is the current intent, Chris, it sure sounds like the September visit by IMSA will be long after plans to remove the shutdown, lockdown, can't go see and do stuff and play among one another deal that's been in place for more than a year will no longer be here. Assuming there are no changes to Governor Newsom's plans, I would really, truly get yourself ready. I'm going to go ahead and call off the dogs, tell security, yeah, all right, let that Chris guy through. But I think you're going to be fine. And I think, again, maybe without having to wear a mask, what's going on right now at Indy, for example, and I think Mid-Ohio as well, Graham, is still part of the mask mandates, even with fans being allowed. Again, just trying to look at where the trends have been going of late. Looks like we could look forward to some things here, not immediately, but the next few months down the road, maybe being kind of sort of normal behavior and being around people. And I don't know if social distancing and masking and all those things are going to still be mandates for spectators and participants alike. So either way, Chris, plan on going.
Excellent news. And hopefully we won't be too far behind that here in Europe. Ed Joris has got a bit of a rant, he says, about sports TV contracts.
Ed has something long to send in. That's a first. Kidding. Sorry. Everything from Ed is very in-depth.
Is the TV contract with NBC up at the same time as the IndyCar contract? And is there any chance that IMSA and IndyCar can come to their senses, he says, work out one combined package with one media entity? I know, don't ask me how, there is more audience overlap with these two series than people generally think. If one outlet was the source for big league US road racing, would everybody win? And couldn't you throw in WC US rights in the same package? When you nickel and dime fans with separate packages for each series, you force fans to make choices they don't want to make, and everyone loses. So says Ed.
Well, yeah. The whole IndyCar and IMSA coming to their senses and work out one combined package. I love the communal mindset of that, Ed. Keep in mind that Graham and I, for example, could decide to come together and come to our senses and craft a combined TV package. But then there'd be the people who make the TV who could possibly not be interested in it. I know I wouldn't if I showed up seeing me there. So it's one thing to say, could IndyCar and IMSA get together? It's another thing to say, but would NBC Sports give a fart? Would CBS or any others really have an interest in that? Just default back to something we've mentioned once or twice already. NASCAR owns IMSA. So wherever NASCAR is, IMSA will be. There's 0% chance of IMSA going off to some other place that NASCAR is not in terms of a broadcast partner. So here's the thing to know, and you would not have had a reason to know this, Graham, but I'll share this, and maybe some others had happened to see it as well. I think it was Monday or Tuesday, the Sports Business Journal posted a story saying, looks like IndyCar could be heading to CBS with its television contract with NBC Sports up at the end of this season. Haven't written about it because I was initially asked to dive into this and do something about it. I dove into it and came back and said, so I still can, but this is coming back to me as a little bit of a nothing burger at the moment. So could IndyCar leave and go to CBS? Yes, of course. Is it as much of a foregone conclusion as some think it might be? I am told no. I'm told they very well could stay with NBC Sports and continue what has been a pretty successful relationship. I mentioned that, and I know this is a sports car show, but this does come back to the sports car side. NASCAR and IMSA are signed with NBC Sports through 2024. So they're going to be there for a little while longer for sure. There's been some inference or suggestions that, oh, well, because NBC Sports, Graham, is shutting off its NBC Sports Network cable channel, one that currently shows a lot of IndyCar, a lot of IMSA, NASCAR, you name it. Since they're shutting that off at the end of the year, wonder if they're going to try and jettison some of the underperforming or the lesser sports properties they're in partnership with at the moment, one of those being IndyCar. But maybe the bigger thing, hey, is NBC Sports really going to downsize their presence in motor racing? With NASCAR and IMSA being there for a few more years, that would suggest that's not the case. It would also suggest that IndyCar could indeed end up staying where they are, and things really just be no different other than when we come back next year. You're either going to have network or the USA Network, I believe, is one of the other cable outlets that they have, or the Peacock. I just expect the changes here, Ed, and for those who are interested in following IMSA, that it's going to be there. I don't foresee them having a need to leave anytime soon. Just going to be a change of you're not going to obviously be able to go to NBCSN and consume it. You're going to have to go to some other places to get your WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, and other content. So at least at the moment, the what's going on with racing on American TV, since so much of it is on NBC Sports or NBC products, it could actually not really be much different, if any different, when we get to the new year. Just one of the main cable outlets used to display those races will no longer be with us. So that's the little catch up there. Why don't I take one more here, and okay, then let's jump over to whatever you say we're doing next. Our pal Lilu, she has sent this in more than once, and I apologize. Says, what's the reason for Ganassi not signing Kevin Magnussen for 2022? She says, I mean, WC is not that many races, so it should be possible to drive in both series. Also says, thanks for a great podcast. Well, it's very, very kind of you, Lilu. The reason they didn't sign him for 2022 is because Kevin wouldn't sign somewhere else for 2022. After his first race, wasn't it, right? Like, after he did one race and signed to go somewhere else next year. And I don't say that in any kind of critical or negative way towards Ganassi. It just struck me as a little funny, like, damn, dude, like, we almost won that Rolex 24 and you're already out? All right. I mean, you know, okay. What are some of the reasons? You'd have to suppose Kevin is European, has a young European family, was clear that he had no intent of moving the family over here to live in the U.S. for the season. You know, he'd be commuting back and forth. Did Kevin Magnussen, as his Haas Formula One career was, well, his wasn't going up in flames, but it was tanking pretty badly, did he envision he'd be driving a sports car in America as the follow-up to his Formula One career? Probably not. I prestige-wise, Graham, I don't think we're being too mean and saying, yeah, as Rosie walks across my face in front of the mic. Thanks, Rose. IMSA ain't F1. I'm not saying the WC is F1, but would just suggest, Lilu, that the chance to drive for a proud championship winning European factory in a primarily European / international traveling sports car championship might interest Kevin a little bit more longer term. Graham, would we be speaking out of turn and suggesting that being a factory Peugeot driver might be a little bit more lucrative than racing in a regional sports car series? So
I think it probably is. Yeah. By the way, I've just checked, and I can confirm, yes, that WEC is not F1 either.
I had read that in a forum, so I wasn't wanting to go all in on that, but I appreciate you being my second source. So
there you go.
Here's the thing I can say, and I think I mentioned it on the podcast, from what I'd heard, and this is a well-placed heard, but not a fact. Ganassi had an option to keep Kevin next year, provided something on the open wheel side was open. And from what I understand, there's nothing that materialized so early in the current season to say, yep, we got a seat waiting for you next year. That, just to close on our IMSA section, Graham, that again, I haven't written about it because, again, I haven't been able to add enough layers of confirmation to it. But from what I have heard, there was an option for that. And it almost sounded like, provided it's accurate, it sounded almost impossible. Hi, we're like 1 or 2 or 3 months into the 2021 season. We might be able to keep you next year, getting you back to open wheel, provided we have a 2022 seat ready and waiting for you. I can think of few scenarios where many IndyCar teams are fully budgeted already for next year and or have someone that is in a car that is fully budgeted that they would say, oh yeah, we're gonna bin that guy for you, before the IndyCar season had even started. So when all this stuff took place, the IndyCar season started on April 18th, Graham. So just saying, it sounded like the window to hold on to him might have been a one that was almost impossible to make that happen, because you'd have to essentially commit to firing somebody to open a seat in IndyCar to put him in there, or have a sponsor commit to 2022 like 6 months before those contracts tend to get signed.
Excellent. That's us for IMSA for this week. It's good to have it up front on the show. First time in a little wee while. And if you're watching in to the IMSA race this weekend at Mid-Ohio, enjoy it. It seems like it's been quite a while since we've had IMSA racing, MP.
2 months!
Two months!
Well, you tell me where we're going, because I think it involves me talking to your face.
Yeah, well, it's going to have to be in this quickfire show. It's going to have to be Wick, Aslam's, Elms, and Aco, particularly as with Mid-Ohio and IMSA. We're here in Austria for the Red Bull Ring, and the European Le Mans Series round two gets underway with free practice having been on track in a bit of rain this afternoon at the Red Bull Ring.
Would you get in trouble if when you're doing comms you refer to it as the Rich Energy Ring or the Monster Energy Ring? Would you get in trouble? Yeah. Okay, so don't do that then.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would be probably impaled on one of the horns of the bull.
Or they'd make you drink some of that stuff. One or the other. Let's see. Long-time listener, first-time question submitter, Daniel Summersgill. Awesome. Wow, Daniel, welcome to the show. Oh, man. We admire your work. What are your predictions for this weekend's ELMS race at the Red Bull Ring? Hashtag me personally. Could be more incidents in traffic than the previous race due to the shorter length of the circuit. Graham, is this going to be the RG Bargy Sports Car Grand Prix?
I think everything that we've seen, the first things first, I mean, I can tell you the team's utterly delighted with the news that the European Le Mans Series will continue to run with the higher downforce kit on the cars for the remainder of the season, other than obviously when the teams that are going to be taking place in the Le Mans 24 Hours run there, then we'll have the low downforce kit, which will run on the cars in the WEC. That's all to do with this stratification between classes. What we've seen already, though, is that with the dialing down of power and the upping of the weight of the P2s, they've not got the overtaking punch that they had before. They're sort of outside their comfort window. They've not been backed up into the LMP3s, but there's not a huge gap in performance between the two. But in straight line speed with GTs and well-pedaled GTs with plenty of factory drivers around, traffic is going to be more of a challenge this season. There are those that say that we're going to see this as being potentially more entertaining, because traffic will be far more of a factor right across the board with ACO rules racing. Do I see there being more incident? I hope not. This is a place where incidents tend to be punished pretty hard. It's got a lot of rise and fall at the Red Bull Ring. And, of course, when you build in gradients to tracks where you've got cars that have had power dialed in and dialed in substantially, that becomes more of a challenge. So it's going to be interesting to see just how well the three classes we have here, LMP2, LMP3, and GTE, how they race well. We've got really high quality and pretty good depth as well in all three classes. It's 41 cars for the weekend. And predictions, I think we're going to see some close racing. I hope closer than we saw perhaps for the lead, at least, in the opening round at Barcelona, where we had more or less three runaway leaders and could have been runaway winners had Decal Engineering managed to maintain their form. WRT certainly have got a very strong hand to play. United Autosports, somewhat bruised, I think, from the events over the last week or two off track, are going to be up for this one in a big way. And equally, I think the G-Drive Racing crew, I can be looking to see what they can bring to the party as well, and others. It could be very close. It might be closer for the podium position battle than for the overall. in GTE. Welcome to the European Le Mans Series, Cooper McNeil, who joins the Proton Competition team in the WeatherTech-backed 77 car this weekend. And that adds another storyline to the party here. Gustavo Meneses, who will be later part of the Glickenhaus Racing squad at Le Mans, and next year will form part of the Peugeot squad, alongside Kevin Magnussen and others, is with Dragon Speed this weekend. So there's lots of storylines to come. Weather might be one of them, I'm hearing at the moment, in this notoriously difficult to predict, meteorologically speaking, region, that we might have weather in mid-race. So it might start dry, we might get wet, it may get drier, is what the current weather forecast is actually saying, although these things can change rapidly in this region. But I am looking forward to it. I can tell you the entire paddock is utterly delighted to be back in Austria. This is one of the most beautiful regions where we've got a race circuit in the world. And it's fair to say that the staff at the Spielberg circuit are just utterly delightful. It is great to be back.
We are going to Andy Lutz. Says, will or should, Graham, the next generation of LMP2 cars due in 2023, if I remember correctly, be made to race more like LMH with less downforce and more straight line speed? Got a couple related, Nikolai B, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think? Where does LMP2 fit into hypercar once it reaches its next model change? And please, let's never use the word stratification again.
Let's not use that word stratification again, because I think we're all bored with the word stratification now, so I won't be using the word
stratification. That indeed. I would like.
It is, I have to say, this whole debate, and there's several questions ranging around this kind of issue, it's absolutely, this is the matter that is gripping the paddock here in Austria. It's not LMDH, it's not hypercar, it is the future of LMP2. And the reality is, I don't think any of us in that paddock know exactly what the plan is, know exactly what the timescale is, know exactly what those cars are going to look like or be powered by, is the straight answer. The key question is when. All I can say, I think we mentioned this last week on Twisk, and it is that the initial idea was that it would come in about a year after the LMDH cars that are going to be based on the same basic chassis, after they debut. The reality there should have been, therefore, probably to expect it in 2024. There's not a commitment to that publicly yet, and privately neither a commitment to that. And I think that's got to change. I think that needs to change and change quickly. We've got a lot of teams with a huge amount of investment in the remarkable number of P2 cars that are around in the European marketplace at the moment. Remember, this is a class that the Le Mans 24 Hours over the last few years has numbered 20 plus cars from around the world, but principally from Europe. And it's fair to say that a number of those teams are beginning to get pretty itchy trigger fingers about their choices. And we should not assume that those teams are necessarily going to A, be able to afford the very significant uplift into LMDH, because believe me, only the minority will be able to afford that. Ranged, by the way, from a very good source in terms of the uptick in a WEC budget as between 50 and 150% of increased budget per car. So that's number one. Not everybody's going to be able to step up. The longer the uncertainty continues, it is my view, informed by multiple conversations with multiple teams, that you may see some of those teams bailing out while there's still value in the package they've got on the second-hand market. It would not be a surprise to see a team or two leaving sports car racing should we not get clarity on the way forward with budgets that appear to be achievable. So it is, I think, a critical moment right now. We've talked a lot about the golden age to come, and I still believe that to be the case, with multiple factories already having committed, multiple others we believe still to come. But we should never forget what sustained this through what have been at times some pretty difficult choppy waters for sports car racing, and that's been the Pro-Am customer-based products. And I think what the teams are saying and beginning to say ever more publicly is, we need respect for this. We need respect for our business planning so that not everything is done at the altar of factory money. And we need a roadmap right now. And right now, that roadmap is not there. So to be clear, we know who's going to produce the chassis. It will be the base chassis that will service the LMDH customers that we know are coming. We don't yet know what's going to be powering that car. We don't know yet what the performance parameters around PITA are going to be. And by the way, we don't yet know, therefore, either, what impact that might have on LMP3 beyond. Because LMP2, of course, at the moment, is the building block for the Continental Series for the ACO, as well as being a support class in IMSA.
Going to general prototype-ish area, a little bit higher class, though. Zach Anderson. That's Anderson, not Stin. I have no idea. My mouth is making words and letters today, Graham, that I'm not really controlling. I don't know why. Is it sports car Tourette's minus the cursing? I don't know. How much can Toyota improve the hashtag GR010, which we lovingly refer to as the Groot, in subsequent races since the homologation is frozen? At DSC editor mentioned during the Spa 6 hours that the hybrid regen braking wasn't perfected yet. Can they change or improve it at this point?
Right. Don't think I quite said that. What I said was, but there was a suspicion that actually that something was not working properly. There are a number of cases where drivers outbrake themselves. So whether or not that was a fault, whether or not that was human error, we don't know. Okay. But certainly in terms of the homologation is indeed fixed. How much can they improve it? Well, I'm saying this with my tongue fairly firmly wedged in my cheek. They improved it by 4 seconds a lap beyond the point where they said they couldn't earlier in the week. So the answer is there is certainly going to be some time and improvement and some honing to be done. Remember, the one thing that they are not going to be able to simulate accurately, despite the fantastic tech they've got at Toyota Gazoo Racing's Cologne plants, is they cannot simulate true race pace with traffic, with weather, with the whole thing that the 124 hours in particular can throw at them. And the second point is that, which is the car will be in a different spec for Le Mans. It'll run slightly less power, 20 kilowatts less power at Le Mans than it will for the remainder of the WEC season. That is part of the process that's been brought forward for Hypercar this year, and I'm sure that will be much the same moving forward. That is part of the process that uses the word that I'm now not permitted to use on Twisk anymore, but the balancing process between the classes, if you like, or rather the imbalancing process between the classes. Do I think they can improve it? This is a team of the highest quality. There's no doubt in my mind that development will come and come quickly, and that we'll have fewer mistakes. They will learn from the mistakes that were made at Spa, and that car will become more reliable, and they will find pace. They won't find huge globs of pace, but they will find, I think, improvements in the reliability of their race pace, let's put it that way. So there are aspects of the car that they can improve and develop, but this is a class, remember, that's been designed not to allow that vertical development curve that pushed budgets just sky high. And that, for the sustainability of the number of teams that we expect to see in the top class of sports car racing, that's the hand everybody is playing to try to get to the point where you've got more sustainable depth in those classes than we've had over the last 5, 6, 8, 9 years.
There we go. What's the word we should come up with since we're not using the band word? Differentiation? Ooh, separation. Separentiation?
Separatrification.
Separatrification.
I like that.
That's going into the Twictionary. I think I can hear Jacob Baim tapping away.
Strutturation.
Yes. It's also something I believe you get when you eat too much chili. What else piques your interest, knowing that we have
I know we've got a very long. Should I just do a bit of a grab bag here?
Grab whatever you want in the next 6 minutes.
No problem. So Richard Cooper asks, do ELMS have any races into night this year? Not that I'm aware. I'm not aware that we're going into darkness at Paul Rickard this year. We did for the second race that replaced cancelled race last year. Right Turn Lover says, is the European Le Mans Series without the Michelin Le Mans Cup this weekend? If yes, why? As far as he knows, there's a couple of spec series filling around the same bill. So the answer is yes, we are running with that Michelin Le Mans Cup. Simple answer is, you'll recall that when we had a double header with the WEC at Silverstone, Michelin Le Mans Cup did not take part in that race, which, by the way, meant that you kept a six-race calendar because the Michelin Le Mans Cup has the road to Le Mans at Le Mans and the LMS doesn't race at Le Mans. So it is effectively, this race replaces that Silverstone race, and this is the one Michelin Le Mans Cup miss. We do indeed, though, you're quite right, have the Ligier European Series, and rather bizarrely, the Porsche Carrera Cup Benelux, and we're nowhere near Benelux. Trust me, we've driven that way, and it's many hundreds of miles. So we've actually had, for my recent career, two consecutive rounds of the Porsche Carrera Cup Benelux, because that shared the bill in Spa for the WC as well just a couple of weeks ago. So that's where we are. Looking else beyond that, what else have we got? Marshall says, Enrique Brown and Graham, thanks for all that you do for sports car racing. Thanks for the thanks.
Now, is that a thank question, you in a positive, or thank you for all the yes. destruction and mayhem and stupidity you yeah. inject? I think it's all the latter.
Absolutely.
And we appreciate it because it's intentional.
I don't think Enrique Brown is some kind of nom de plume for either John Doonan or Pierre Fion, so it's not them. Let's have a quick question is, what or who finally knocked some sense into the ACO and FIA to upload the WEC races to YouTube in a timely manner? Pleasantly surprised it was only a few days after the initial race. Before that would take a month or two. I think it's just a change in the way in which the rights have been determined and sold. And, look, as a sports car fan and someone who does like you guys to have access to what I believe is the best show we do on WC, I'm delighted that they're doing that, and long may that continue. And yes, I share your ire that I know you've actually shared with on the Weekend Sports Cars before. I would like to see that coverage provided without a paywall, but that's not my call.
Enrique, we got the real answer here. They kept losing the password, so that someone finally put it on a post-it note, taped it to the keypad on the laptop, so now they can upload things faster. It's just for years. Dude, what's the... I don't know. I forgot the password. Is it password uppercase P? Is it password lowercase P, but like an exclamation at the end? Anyways, I just read that the person who invented the adhesive that made post-it notes what they are died. So we're going to pour out a beer for the person who invented the thing that ultimately helped the WC tape it onto their laptop so they stop forgetting the password so they can upload faster on YouTube.
Okay. Two quick ones to finish. it's not far off, I'm sure. Richard Cooper says, will manufacturer LMP1s be released from captivity? Are they too complex to run? Will obsolescence of parts be a problem? I don't think we're going to see the hybrid range of LMP1s in private hands anytime soon. I am told, well, I know
Audi drivers.
There is at least one diesel only rather than the e-tron R18 in private hands, and there may well be a second to come in the relatively near future. But I think that's as far as we're going to get with LMP1s for the foreseeable future, at least because of the complexity of those cars. I think the final one, let's have a quick look. Johnny Schultz says, it's his decision, but in my opinion, James Glickenhouse is really overdoing it a bit with his justifications for why his racing program is mainly focused on Le Mans. Personally, I find it a bit strange that a guy who builds multi-million dollar sports cars and desert buggies argues he doesn't want to sell cars in the Middle East. After all, Bicolis has always been very selective about participating in regular WEC races. He thinks Glick and us can do without the resulting performance and perception of the team. Right. Let's be clear here,
John. Oh, snap. So, this sounds like a very brief soapbox visit.
It's going to be a quickie, this one. Number one, it's his money, okay? He will spend that money where he chooses to spend that money. And I've read a lot on social media about Jim and his motivations and the statements. Jim is a big character, okay? He has a big personality. And here's the thing that all of us need to remember. And Jim, I hope you're listening to this, which is Jim, and I believe completely correctly, doesn't give a stuff about anybody else's opinion. That's it, okay? Doesn't care what I think. He's quite happy to listen to what I think, which is very, you know, endearing of him. Doesn't really care what any of the listeners to this show think. Doesn't really care, to be blunt, what the ACO think. He will race his cars where he decides to spend the cubic yardage of euros and dollars that it costs to do that. My belief is that the cars are not full season WEC entries. They are race by race entries. And as such, he can choose which races he enters, and the WEC can choose whether or not they accept those entries. That's the way it works. Okay. So this is not talking down to anybody. And yes, he's got a big personality. And yes, sometimes that means he can come across as being quite irascible on social media. But here's the thing, and I've said it before and I'll say it again. Jim Glickenhouse is your eye, MP, but with the money, the means, and the motivation to deliver on the kind of things that we would love to dream of being able to do. And I love him to bits for it, in the same way that I have massive appreciation for the vast majority of gentleman drivers that choose to spend their millions of dollars and euros year in, year out, fulfilling their passion, and in doing so, buying the cars from the manufacturers, putting professional and semi-professional drivers into work, and putting hundreds, if not thousands, of motorsport professionals into work as well. For that, forget anything else right now, for that, Jim and Jesse Glickenhouse, I absolutely salute you. And I hope, and I've heard some bits and pieces over the last couple of days about how things are going for the Glickenhouse project, I hope that's going to fulfill your hopes for where it's going to take you, because I've heard positive things lately about the way in which that car has been testing of late.
I think we're done.
Okay.
Say goodnight, Lucy.
Let's do that with apologies. So it has been a bit of a short one. And again, apologies for the fact that the call quality has been suffering, because this is on literally a cell phone in my Airbnb bedroom. I've been Graham Goodwin. He's been Marshall Pruitt. This has been the Week in Sports Cars, part of the Marshall Pruitt podcast, with thanks to Cooper Tyres, with thanks to the Justice Brothers and to TorontoMotorsports.com. We'll join you next week, hopefully with a longer show, hopefully with slightly better sound quality, but be there with the questions that come out from this weekend's action, both IMSA and the European Le Mans Series, and the other inevitable news that will follow on the back of those other matters in the world of sports cars. I'm GG, he's MP. Go on.